Hello and welcome to what promises to be a superb edition 168 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula 1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We're also on Future Radio in Norwich and brought to you by our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up for the game for free by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. I am sports journalist Michael Bailey and we are here at our home away from home, the delightful Rushcutters Public House in Thorpe on the outskirts of Norwich, to review the Monaco Grand Prix in Monte Carlo, and hopefully we can avoid being flipped sideways into a wall. In this pod, we will review all the key talking points, dissect Kimi's expression on the podium, consider Jenson Button's latest parting gift to F1, take a moment to salute Fernando Alonso, who travelled all the way across the Atlantic to suffer another engine failure, and as ever, dish out our of the weekend awards. Joining us this week are 2 times Beccles Kart champion Kyle Cumbers.
Hello and good evening.
And good evening. I like it, Kyle. Doubled up. Motoring journalist David Tillier.
Cheers.
And an F1 fan who has just moved to Norfolk, therefore instantly becomes part of our community. A warm welcome to NRF1 debutant Stuart Webber.
Good afternoon.
Nicely done. I hope everyone is well. Going to get straight into it, I reckon. Monaco. Superb win for Sebastian Vettel, all sorts of talking points, but I guess first of all we need to address the elephant in this beer garden. Stuart, you were in Monte Carlo for race day. How was it?
It was okay. The race itself was average at best. Fortunately, I was sat where Jenson Button decided to do his little party trick for us, so that would sort of liven it all up a little bit. But yeah, the race itself was a little bit of a non-event, but it was all right. The atmosphere was good and the weather was fantastic, and can't complain being at Monte Carlo, but you know, you're there for, I'd rather see a good race and get wet, to be honest.
I mean, you did see the only real action that happened right in front of you at Portier.
Yeah, and Nico Hülkenberg also broke down there, so you know, you give a nice...
They were the only 2 things that happened on the track.
So that was nice, you know, got a little wave off Nico, and that was about it, really.
That was good of him to do that straight to you.
Yeah, yeah. Got a picture of it as well. So,
thank you. I'll take that. Definitely. Guys, are you jealous that Stuart was at Monaco? Has anyone ever been to Monaco here?
I've never been to Monaco. Yeah, definitely jealous. It's probably one to tick off the bucket list. But yeah, probably a little bit of rain would you take a soaking just to watch a good race, I think, there. But yeah, one day maybe, one day.
I've been to Monaco, never for the race. But
I've not been to Monaco either, but I will be going next year, not to the race. But I'm planning to drive from Norwich to Monaco, and then across to Lake.
Back.
And then across to Lake Como in Italy, and then up through Switzerland, back into France.
I don't want to hear any more of that. Sounds amazing.
Short trip.
Short trip.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, take us with you.
I haven't decided how long I'm going to do it over, but at least a week, if not 2 weeks.
Give yourself longer than a day, definitely. So back onto the race, shall we? Sebastian Vettel. Great win. A lot of talk about team orders in the way that he got ahead of Kimi Raikkonen, but it was just better strategy, wasn't it? He just nailed it and played it right. It's all about the overcuts these days, and he pulled it off.
Yeah, I mean, he was a lot quicker than Raikkonen, but I found it interesting that Raikkonen had his pit stop and then came out in traffic, which obviously helped Vettel. I mean, where they could have been worried about Bottas and Verstappen at pitted first, and Bottas obviously matched him and they weren't that far behind, so I understand why they would bring him in, but it was convenient for Ferrari to massage Vettel into their lead, so and it, you know, it makes sense in a way, but we want to see a battle on the track, but Ferrari need Vettel to get as many points as possible, so it makes sense to do what, if they did anything, it makes sense to do what they did.
I mean, it was the first Ferrari win in Monaco for 16 years and only the second win in Monaco from P2 in 14 years. We got to see Seb dance, but without the weird Egyptian bit, which, by the way, I got wrong on a video that we did at the start of the season. Should have been more of an Egyptian dance. But anyway, Kimi's expression on the podium, DT. I mean, he's not a man... I mean, even then, he didn't really pull a different expression to what we've seen. You could just tell he was really... angry.
Yeah. Look, he was just normal.
Yeah. Well, as Norfolk's foremost Kimi Raikkonen impersonator,
watch the video on the YouTube channel.
It's, well, what do you expect from Kimi Raikkonen? He's never one to be elated when he's on the top step, let alone second when he probably thinks he should have come first. I think he was the faster driver up until the second half. Ferrari let him down in a way, but at the same time, I don't think he, once it happened, he didn't make any effort to do anything about it. I don't think he was like, oh, well, screw it, sod it, I'll settle.
It was his first pole in 128 Grand Prix. Did you think you were going to see a Kimi win?
No. I always thought Sebastian would win it. I think credit to him, the laps he pulled out once he got out in front as well, that he was taking the second and a half a lap, even being there live, seeing it, you could just so visually sort of quicker. And I think Kimi, I couldn't hear the radio stuff, which you get the benefit of on the TV, but pretty much every other race he's always complaining about his tyres going off long before Sebastian is. So when he came in first, it was no surprise, because I'm thinking he's probably moaning that his rears are going off or something, and at that point Sebastian sort of nailed it, and I think it's the right call for Ferrari to make. They're only on about worried about winning the constructors' title. No one can doubt that Sebastian Vettel's the number one, because you only have to look at his record there in the last two and a bit years now. He's owned Kimi Raikkonen. So I've got to be honest, if I was in charge of Ferrari and I was backing a horse, I'd be backing the Sebastian Vettel horse anyway. As for Kimi not looking the happiest, when does he? Like you say, he could be on the top step and you'd look a little bit disappointed probably.
Lee McKenzie tried to convince us all that actually he has been really great with sponsors, and he can really liven up. So maybe it's just the post-race stuff where it doesn't really happen, but I've not seen it.
Maybe it's because at sponsors events they have alcohol and he's apparently does get a little bit more lively once he's had a few drinks.
You said it. That's all I'm going to take. We will get on to Mercedes, but I mean, we do feel Ferrari have got the quickest race car this season, and they're probably favourites for both titles.
I think it's the most consistent. Mercedes definitely do seem to have issues. If they can't quite get it in the sweet spot, then they struggle. And Ferrari seems the all-round car. There's still a long way to go. There's still a lot of races. I'm sure Mercedes can come back, but definitely Ferrari seem a slight step ahead at the moment.
Yeah, we'll see how it pans out, shall we? Okay, let's go for a plug. The results came out apparently during the Monaco weekend for the Motorsport Network Global F1 Fan Survey. But if you, like us, haven't had the chance to look at the results yet, or even if you have, then book an hour free and sit down to edition 160 of the NRF1 podcast, where we complete the survey and solve all of F1's issues down the pub, which is, as we all know, the best way to solve any issue in the world. And if you want to make sure you never miss an episode of the NRF1 podcast and get subscribed through your podcast player of choice, just visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe. And you'll find the link for you, be it iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast, whatever. And if you can't find your link, then let us know with an email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Right, let's fire up the Monte Carlo NRF1 pit stops. New. Mercedes, then. I've got down written here, horrible weekend salvaged by a decent Bottas drive. Agree, Stuart?
No. To be honest, I think he should be disappointed that he wasn't on the podium. I think he's got the car wasn't great all weekend, but I think he should still be ahead of a Red Bull, in my opinion. I think Lewis can be happy with the race result if you see what happened in qualifying, but again, I think everyone knows around Monaco you've got to get a banker in, and he didn't do that, so everyone can talk about Van Dorn and the yellow flags on what would have been his last lap, but I think someone of his experience and ability should know that you have got to get a banker in first and then worry about the top 10 places after that. So I think overall they'll be disappointed. The gap now is big to Vettel. The constructors, I think, 17 points now. The next three races on paper favour probably the Ferrari, so I think it's a big sort of three races coming up for them to sort of get back on track, because they don't want to get too far behind, you know.
Indeed, it struck me as horribly naive what happened, DT.
It's a difficult thing with Monaco, because it does throw out some interesting sort of anomalies compared to the rest of the F1 season. Yeah, I think Mercedes should be upset with their result, but also should not be surprised. I think their car obviously isn't clearly suited to that kind of circuit and that kind of running. And I think Hamilton specifically as well. Although he's won there, he's never been. It's not his ace track. You know, he's never been sort of considered like a Monaco master, and he was pretty rubbish, and was definitely outclassed by his teammate on the Saturday. But overall, I think it's a weekend to forget for Mercedes, and try and sort of buck their ideas up for the next race and hope that it's just a single event and not something that's going to continue all season.
Yeah, I guess that's the big discussion. First time Hamilton has not made it to Q3 due to pace since 2013. We did have a great save from him, and I quite like the sort of taking the hand off and sort of flicking his hand after to go, yeah, I like that. And then, as we said, the weird error of judgment. And it's curious, I mean, Mercedes have won this race four years on the trot, I think, and then not a Mercedes on the podium at all, which is weird.
Yeah, I think last year Ricciardo should have won the race. And probably due to a Red Bull error, Hamilton managed to snatch that. It's just, Rosberg before the race on Sky Sports said that they were aware of a unusual setup error on Hamilton's car. I think for Rosberg to back Hamilton up, you've got to believe that that's correct. So maybe they've found that and maybe they can move on, but it's just, like I said before, it just seems so unpredictable, that car. And especially Monaco as well, where the car was snapping on Hamilton during qualifying. If you lose confidence, that's the worst place to lose it, because you end up in a wall with a slight error. But thankfully for Hamilton, it's Canada next, and that is one of his favourite tracks, so maybe he can bounce back there.
He loves it. Apparently Lewis has never DNF'd at Monaco, which is a remarkable record. Assuming that's true, I haven't checked it, but I should have done. Did he have a good race, Lewis? Because, I mean, he clearly made up places finishing the points, but, you know, a lot of people DNF'd. I think I worked it out. There was only two drivers who started ahead of him who actually finished the race, compared to the gaps and the places he made up, 13th to 7th.
Yeah, I think he has to take it there, because you can't overtake, as we know. But, yeah, I think in the end it's a decent result for him. I think to achieve 7th, where he was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think from that position, I think he would have taken that at the start. Knowing that you can't overtake, and you know he was massively compromised, so when people were having their stops, he didn't have the opportunity to sort of make up any time. When he did have finally a little bit of free air, it was almost a little bit too little too late. So I think 7th place in the end, I think he'll take that and dust himself off and go again
for Montreal, which we know he loves, as you said, Carl. Red Bull. So, I mean, Max Verstappen didn't really like the fact that Daniel Ricciardo's overcut worked, but it was much better from Daniel.
Yeah, I think he had a cracking race. I think it is another example of the fact that he's a class act. I think we talk about Max all the time and how amazing he is and how excited he is, but actually as a pairing, they're probably the most exciting pairing, I think, on the grid, for raw talent alone. And I think he deserved the result, and the strategy worked for him. And Red Bull traditionally go with alternate strategies anyway, so I don't think Max should be upset that they went one way and his didn't work, because if he was on the receiving end, the other end, he wouldn't be moaning. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think Ricciardo showed that he was the quicker driver on track, as well as having the best strategy as well. So
the problem is, as soon as they go somewhere quick, this isn't going to stick, is it, Kyle?
No, I mean, Monaco seems, or street circuit seems to be their best chance of picking up a victory. Obviously, it's not any, I mean, Red Bull like to say it's all Renault's problem, but they haven't built a quick enough car in general this year.
Doesn't Monaco prove it's aerodynamically pretty quick, though?
Yeah, but they qualified 4th and 5th, and as of last year, Ricciardo was on pole, so compared to last year, the made a step backwards.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, I mean, there's talk of Adrian Newey getting more involved this year, but maybe it's a bit too late. Yeah, I mean, Montreal's probably not a strong circuit for them, and I'd be worried if they have to wait all the way to Singapore for a next good result. But Formula 1, it'd be great if they were at the front, causing a bit of chaos for the Ferrari and Mercedes. Yeah.
It would be great to see. Just want to touch on Force India, their point scoring runs for the team, which I think they point scored in every race in 2017, maybe both drivers every race, I can't remember now. And a rather erratic Sergio Perez, his 15 race run of point scoring is over. Little grimace there from Kyle. Haas, two teams in the points for the first time ever.
First time ever, yes.
They were delighted. Did they have a party at Haas?
Not yet, but they were very, very, very pleased.
Not yet. So they've got one scheduled for
possibly,
it? Or?
Possibly.
Speaking of Haas, I saw the signage in Norwich for the first time when I was sat at the roundabout on the top of Grapes Hill.
Was this before or after Sunday?
This is before Sunday. Yes.
So I might have, you know, some bunting up now.
Maybe. But yeah, I was sort of sat in traffic and I just crossed, you know, I probably wouldn't have noticed it before they joined Formula One, if I'm honest. But yeah, it was quite cool to see them. See, they've got the old tax offices in Norwich.
Good knowledge, DT.
Oh, please, Gene Hess, you know, promoting his brand
in Norwich.
Across the world, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep, you're welcome.
And we all know Norwich is the cornerstone of the world, so.
Yeah. You're learning that, aren't you, Stuart?
Yeah, no comment.
Yeah. McLaren I've got next. Jensen, capital letters, exclamation mark. I mean, he seemed quite fond of Pascal Verlaine, didn't he? It was the unsafe release on lap one. I mean, it was great to see them both trying something different with the strategy. And then, as we touched on earlier, the sort of scoop crash, which looked a real worry. I mean, you saw it live, so you'd have seen that it was kind of like he just sort of flopped over and realistically nothing bad was going to happen. But when we just saw his car sideways up against a wall, you're like, now what's happened there?
Yeah, it was strange, to be honest. When it happened live, you're like, ironically, in the Formula Renault race earlier this morning, someone had passed someone there, and it was like, what a great move. So when he tried it, you're like, oh no, what are you doing here? And then
it was rusty, wasn't it, at best?
It was a bit desperation, I think, of let's have a go, come on. Which, you know, maybe the race needed that, but it was a shame to sort of end like that. But yeah, no, at the time the car was obviously up against it, all the stewards were waiting to try and bring it down, but even with a safety car, the drivers just weren't slowing down, not to the level of being safe to go on the track. So he's stuck up against the wall, the fans are all booing, come on, get him out or whatever. The medical guy, to be fair, is on top putting his thumbs up to say obviously the guy's obviously alright. But yeah, it was a weird 5 minutes while they were about sort of to move the car down.
Yeah, well, we had to kind of wait for the radio message to check if Pascal, because at that point Formula One is so careful not to say anything, and you don't see a replay, you just see the car lying there, just to be careful about not mentioning what,
because they hardly caught it as well on the TV. I've watched the highlights since, and they only caught the back end of it and then the onboard view of Jensen, and obviously Pascal Verlaine doing it. But yeah, it was weird.
It was a shame in a way that Jensen's race didn't end there, because then he could have got out and, you know, given you away from there, and you and your Jensen cap.
I'd love that on my Jensen cap, to be honest. I would have absolutely loved it. I mean, I said to my uncle before the race, I said, I just hope the Honda sticks out a lap so we can see him come past at least once, you know. So
when he went 60 past, of them.
Well, then he didn't come round again, and I thought, oh my god, it's over, because obviously we didn't have a big screen, didn't have the radio, so I've got BBC Sport on, and obviously he pitted, but at the time live I thought, what's happened, you know, has he come off somewhere? But yeah, it would have been nice if he got out and waved there.
That, since you've seen what the state of the car was, I mean, he wasn't going to make it back round to Portier, was he? His wheel was on the side.
It was a little bit of a mess, bless it.
And what we should say is Jensen did at least do an overtake on Lewis in FP2, which is probably his highlight of the weekend. Just for and giggles, I'm pretty sure that was. McLaren did have two cars in Q3 for the first time this year, but it's the penalties, didn't they? Just blow it for them again, and no wonder Fernando Alonso went off to Indianapolis. Jensen was always at the back as well, which DT meant we never got to see the butt grow per. Well, I don't know what would you call that.
I don't know what you would call it.
You came up with it. So.
I didn't come up with it. This is a genuine thing from back in, you know, back in the good old days when Jenson Button was a regular fixture. But we didn't get to see the butt groper return.
Anyway, but what now for Jensen? Maybe a more pertinent question. He's not coming back, is he? I mean, in his interviews, he was like, "I just get me out of here. This was on Sunday."
Yeah, I was kind of on Saturday when I watched the qualifying. I was filled with a little bit of optimism. For Jensen to return, because actually this is the first race I've given a shit about all year, to be honest, because he's in it.
Can't say that, we get you on this podcast.
That is the truth. I watch and enjoy F1 to a degree. It seems to be less and less every year. I don't know why.
You have to cut this bit.
No. I've got to leave it in. So we've got no standards. It's fine.
but I was really, and actually, it was the best qualifying I've seen all year. Just because it was a really good result for McLaren. It was a good result for Jensen was involved in it. He seemed to be doing well. And I thought, hopefully not with McLaren. Hopefully he can come back next year. Maybe it'd be interesting to see him sort of. But after Sunday, I kind of think I don't blame him. To be perfectly honest with you, he's probably been having a really good time. He's been involved in serious motorsport since he was a teenager, and all of the commitments that come along with that, with no let up at all. And he's just had 6 months of just doing what he likes, going everywhere with his fit model girlfriend, going on holidays, doing all the stuff he wants to do, you know, not having to train as hard, and still very wealthy for it. So would
sounds
Yeah, I mean,
what's he doing?
What I would like to see though is I'd like to see him in tin top racing. I'd like to see him get into a decent Le Mans. Yeah, World Endurance team would be.
Imagine
cool.
if he won Le Mans before Fernando.
I'd love that, especially seeing as one of my really, really good mates is a massive Alonso fan, and we have this sort of like mutual sort of like of both people, but also this opposite, this rivalry as well. So yeah, so that would make me very happy.
Hashtag Bants. I just want to touch then, as you've taken us to it really, Indy. I mean, the irony, Kyle, of Fernando Alonso going all that way for another engine blowout. I mean, Stuart, you're obviously engaged in Monaco, so I'm assuming you didn't see it. Did you watch Indy?
I watched the first... what lap was the major crash on? Was it 53? Yeah. 53? He'll go so fast.
Well, what I realised from watching Indy for the first time is you'd never watch the whole thing sat in your living room. You'd be there for hours and the thing just keeps stopping and starting.
Every lap is the same, pretty much. I mean, they occasionally swap places and stuff, but... yeah, it was a weird thing watching it because I kind of really enjoyed watching it. It was quite new and it was quite novel. But then after watching so many laps, I thought, well, right, how can I watch 200 of these things? Because they're all the same pretty much.
I think I decided you'd sort of clock in with about 50 laps to go and see how it was going. That said, Scott Dixon's crash. I couldn't believe he was sitting there, stood in front of us talking about it within 10 minutes. Yeah. And if you haven't seen the crash, take it in, because it's incredible how safe those cars are. I think that was what I took from it. But what did you make of it, Carl?
Well, I did actually watch it all.
Well done, because I stopped as soon as Fernando went out, and I did think he was going to win it. And by that stage, I was like, he's going to actually win this.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'd predicted he wouldn't as well.
I only stopped watching because I had a wedding to go to. So.
Enough of your excuses, dude.
I mean, I was doing other stuff on my laptop. I did sit there for 3.5 hours, I think it went on for.
What a way to spend a Sunday.
Hey? Yeah. Yeah, it took me half an hour for a decent illegal feed as well.
But it was, I mean, normally I'd sort of keep an eye on it and maybe watch the end after the several safety cars and cautions and various things they chuck out to try and make it interesting. So yeah, I mean, it was, at least the Honda engine in IndyCar is quick. I mean, that's the problem with the Honda engine at the moment. It's not quick, it's not reliable, it's goddamn awful. So at least he had fun and was able to overtake cars, and yeah, but it's a shame because obviously interesting to see what he could do in the McLaren at Monaco, because Van Dorn qualified so well. It'd been interesting to see where he would have finished, and it'd also been interesting also if they'd have got the grid penalty, the engine penalties. Did they just give him to Button because it was a one off, or did they really need to do him at the time?
I think it was worth him going just to see Fernando Alonso in the lead of something, you know.
Oh, he did.
Genuinely challenging for the lead. There'd been the bits that I saw, you know, where they were sort of having that little inter-team sort of, not battle, because it was interesting because they have this sort of team relationship where they can't follow each other in the same order constantly, because otherwise that would be detrimental to their long-term race and all the fuel stuff. So they switch places like some kind of Tour de France team, you know. It's quite interesting from just like a strategical point of view, even if they are just going round and round in circles.
No, I agree, and it's great for us to be able to take it in. I thought it added interest, definitely, and I think they should do it more. It's just a shame it was on the same weekend as Monaco. So if it wasn't for that, it was great to see Fernando compete. It felt like a sort of a renewed love of Fernando Alonso, and he'll come back with a beaming smile on his face, I'm sure. And both him and Jensen did really well, actually, when you consider what they were taking on over the weekend. Finally, just stopping off at the FIA, it was a bit of class to have them in silence, I think, before the Monaco Grand Prix, to pay tribute to the victims of last week's Manchester terror attacks, most definitely. So we are on social media, obviously, and you can follow us there. The channels are Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at the NRF1, or you can visit us on Facebook, fb.me/thenrf1. We're giving the website some TLC, honest, when I get a minute, so you'll find that over the coming weeks. Hopefully it has a fresher look, hopefully easier to use. The website is nrf1.uk, and you'll find blogs, stats, our latest prediction league standings. And how you got on in the betting tips, Carl? How did they go?
Break even with Kimi Raikkonen's podium. It's break even.
I took part in them this time, so obviously didn't get a clean sweep this week because I took part in them. So that's always where it goes. Right, let's. Time is pressing. Move on to our of the weekends. Okay, very straightforward. Driver, team, Pastor, and highlight of the weekend. Lost track of them there. Driver, or Rodolfo Gonzalez, driver of the weekend. Who'd like to name, go, who first? Go on, give us a name. We'll rattle through these.
Carlos Sainz, for sixth place.
Excellent drive, wasn't it?
Yeah, Carlos Sainz, I agree. Yeah.
Danny Ricciardo, going up to third.
Just a word, it's next year. We pronounce it Ricciardo because he's Italian. It's an Italian name, but he's Australian, and he had to change it when he was at school because the Aussie kids couldn't pronounce it. It really annoys me.
You can ignore Michael. It's Ricardo. Don't worry.
Ricardo. Yeah. We call him Danny Rick.
You can call him Danny Rick. That's fine.
Danny Rick then.
Ricciardo. I had Kimi as well because I actually thought he had a good weekend. It wasn't his fault that Vettel maybe just did him on strategy. Or Ferraris, for the matter. A team of the weekend.
Ferrari. 1-2. Never looked in danger all weekend for me, other than probably the first practice. So Ferrari for me.
Yeah, Ferrari. Ferrari Haas, maybe.
Biased dogger Haas.
He'll take the Haas, obviously. I wanted to mention Channel 4 for a lot of reasons. They had great nostalgic coverage. Take note, Ped. That's why we love Monaco. At 1955, Alberto Ascari going into the harbour and just coming up with a scratch. I'd not known that story. And Ascari died 4 days later at Monza in another accident. It's an incredible story. We're going to have to touch on this somehow later. We also found out Susie Wolf is back and her child is called Jack. Did we know that? You're nodding as if you knew that.
I was watching the same coverage that you were. Yeah,
I just remember it being a question that we were going to get to. So yeah, Jack Wolf. How exciting!
Not as I suggested, Air Wolf.
Not Air Wolf. No. Ben Edwards, great moment here when Jolyon Palmer, yes, he did race, was on the radio and he said, loads of understeer. And Ben Edwards sort of came back off the radio and said, oh yeah, Jolyon Palmer there saying he's got a lot of understeer. Yep, pretty much. That's almost exactly what he said, Ben Edwards. The grid walk was nuts as well. Everyone was on about Turn 1 or Sandevot being carnage. And also, Eddie Irvine with blonde hair. Genuinely, did not have a clue it was him until I eventually clocked that it was Eddie Irvine. I think he was talking to David Coulthard. I didn't get the impression they got on very well. That was just a slight feeling I had. Pastor or goat of the weekend?
Of course, tough one. Did you argue Lewis is qualifying, possibly?
I think you can do that, definitely.
Yeah, maybe. That's a bit harsh on Button for his attempted overtake. At least he tried an overtake.
Yeah, probably Lewis, probably, yeah. My man, Jenson Button.
Oh.
Yeah, love him dearly, but that was a bit stupid.
He's your man as well, Stuart. Is he your...
No, I've had a think about this, so I'm going to be a little bit harsher. Stoffel van Dorn. Oh. Chance of getting the first point from McLaren and blows it.
I love that. A great shout. I've got Marcus Ericsson for managing to crash out while overtaking the safety car. I mean, I literally... How did that even happen? Unbelievable stuff. Lance Stroll as well, because he declared on the radio he was all out of ideas halfway through the race. So yeah, that bodes well. I've got quite a lot here. There was the qualifying interviews after the race. I don't know if they were being played out. Oh, no, you weren't there on Saturday, were they? But on the TV coverage, the mic just kept dropping out, and then Kimi Raikkonen dropped his helmet, and it just got very awkward, even though I quite like the idea of them.
He also headbutted the microphone as well. As he was trying to pick up his helmet, he just went bonk in the helmet.
That's probably the best thing I've ever heard. And Nico Rosberg on the podium interviews. I just found it really cringy. I just find Nico a bit cringy. I'm sorry, Nico.
I just want to say something. Go away, Nico. We don't want you back.
He is still world champion, DT. I have total respect. but he will be back somewhere or other. And he didn't get to see Lewis interviewed by Nico on the podium the tarmac. That would have been fun. Highlight of the weekend.
Mine was the interaction between Fernando Alonso and JB in the pit lane before the race started. Their little radio confab. Fernando, giving a heartfelt, warm message to JB, and JB going, "Yeah, I'm going to pee in your seat." That was made me chuckle. And it's another reason why I like both of those drivers, not just as drivers. There are drivers that are interesting to watch. Especially a lot of the new guys that come in, interesting to watch on the track, maybe. But actually, we put them in front of the camera, and they're just dull. Some of the time, not all the time, but whereas JB and Fernando, they're kind of the elder statesmen, and they've kind of got a nice, easy, relaxed way about them, which is nice to see and nice to be as part of the sport, I think.
Spot on, love that.
Highlight, nothing to do with a race, to be honest. It was a arriving at the circuit just outside the grandstand. I can see this very attractive lady walking towards me, walking a dog in what can only be described as the best outfit I've ever seen, as if she's going to like the most important night out of her life, picking up dog poo. So of course I took a photo of her, sent it to my wife and said, "I think you're a bit underdressed when you walk the dog." And I thought, only this can happen in Monaco, where she's fully prodded up and everything. I was looking at, she like looked $1 million. She looked at me as if I was a piece of dog poo, to be honest. But such as
that happens in Monaco,
as I had a camera in her face. But yeah, it was like that moment of wow, she doesn't even realise what's happening here.
So how did she do this? Did she have a scoop? Did she have a plastic bag?
Little bag. She went old school. To be fair, I thought she might have had someone with her to pick it up.
Yeah, she looked
that sort of posh. But yeah, that was definitely a highlight.
And then what did she do with it? Put it in her handbag?
No, she carried with her. Carried it with her. Again, old school. Yeah, but. Looked $1 million.
Well, there we go. Yeah, that's been some roundabouts.
Kyle? Even though I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan and qualifying was a bit depressing, I just love qualifying at Monaco, just seeing the cars on the edge.
It was better than the race, to be honest.
Yeah, and most years it is. But yeah, it's just good to see cars on the edge at Monaco.
Spot on. What have I got written here? No, that's basically it.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers. Just one final question. Was there actually an overtake in the entire race?
What,
by shoving him into the wall?
Yeah, that's true.
He
got past him and carried on for 100
true,
yards.
That's true, isn't it? That is true. That was actually technically an overtake. Yeah. Now. All right, well, on that note, I think we should leave it there, shouldn't we? Next week, you know the drill by now, I'm sure. 3 podcasts in 3 days, including our Canadian preview and predictions, but starting with our F1 news review featuring your audio submissions and questions on our Twitter and Facebook pages. If you want your voice heard on the podcast, simply press the red button over at nrf1.uk or leave us a message in Word form that we can read. That's fine. But before that, this week, we have a bonus podcast on its way. The astute among you may already know what that is likely to be. For the rest of you, we'll give you a bit more time to guess. For now, it's a goodbye from Kyle.
Goodbye.
From DT.
Adios.
From Stuart.
Ciao.
From myself. Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/NRF1. Thanks to Future Radio. This has been the NRF1 podcast. The magic of Monte Carlo is put to bed for another year, which means we've all got 12 months to save up for a ticket in 2018. We'll be back quicker than it takes Jensen to flip a Sauber. Until then, goodbye.